Well, we'd just like to share some things about after college.
Hold it.
Okay, this is Dad Ed Crane again. Second part, first verse. Okay.
And this is Grammy, and I'm listening, and I'll join in when I need to.
After college, you know, college was a wonderful time for Suzanne and I because we had to learn how to sacrifice. We were trying to get out of college. Concerned about a job after college. It was, our little apartment was a one-room utility efficiency apartment there at the college had built for young couples like us. There were 12 of these apartments. They were new, and they're $35 a month is what it cost us. So, I mean, here we are. We're living in the same room. We're studying in the same room. We're bathing in the same room. We're eating in the same room. It was a one-room deal, and we learned how to really live with each other because we had a close environment, and we learned how to sacrifice and share as well. I had the privilege to where I worked. I had access to food that others didn't have, and so I could get food at a reduced price. And some of the couples really didn't have enough to feed their families with, but they were committed to going to college. So we would share stuff with couples that were there and help them as we could. We also were the suppliers of the entertainment. We had the croquet set and we had a badminton set. We wore all of the coloring off the croquet balls because we just hit them so many times. There was no color. We just didn't know whose ball was whose. So, and the badminton set was just we'd play it till we couldn't see anymore, and then we'd turn the porch lights on and play a little bit after dark. But those were fun times, and I had the only car that would, in the coldest of winter, that would start because I had changed it from a 6-volt to an 8-volt system and learned how to do that through my local mechanic. And so my car would always start. And so we became, an early Uber, but we didn't charge anything. So those were kind of neat experiences there. And just one thing I want to say about Grammy, she loved little gherkin pickles. And her dad always brought her pickles because he sold at the pickle plant in Texarkana. He was in the woods business, and he sold them there. They're redwood. They made the vats to cure the pickles. So little gherkin pickles were one of her top favorites. And so I brought her in a bottle one day, a jar, and it was quite expensive. It was like $1 that's when you made $1.25 an hour. So that was a real big deal. It was like a box of candy, really. So I brought that to her and gave it to her, and she was so happy. Well, I came in the next day, and she was seated down in front of the little refrigerator we had, that's like you have in college refrigerator now, and she was crying, and I didn't know what in the world was going on. I went over there, and she had dropped the jar of pickles and broke them, and she was crying over pickles. So that was kind of a neat experience. So we got through that. The last semester was really a tension-filled, stress-filled semester because I was trying to graduate and needed to make the grades and get out and get a job so I could take care of her and our future family. So under a lot of stress and pressure. So, but we had the shingles, which was kind of a neat experience of not knowing what's going on. And I was working on Saturday and checking a lady out, and I doubled over and fell in her basket and just screaming bloody murder, really, because it hurts so bad. She thought I was dying. So the owner ran down and found out, and so I went to the doctor, and that's when it didn't have anything for shingles other than just work it out. So Dr. Lee, little Dr. Lee was his name, and he looked at me and he said, "Oh boy, this is bad." He said, "I'm not sure you get over this." And I said, "Doc, come on, man." I said, "Yeah, I'm trying to graduate from college. I'm working 44 hours a week. I said, you know, I don't have any life insurance. I'm recently married. I got a new wife. I can't die. And he just laughed. He said, he said, I just kidding you. He said, you're not going to die. He says, this is shingles. He said, you know, see that red ring around your belly? He said, you just better be glad it didn't meet, because that's when you would die. And he was full of baloney, you know. So he just said, well, he said, let me ask you. He said, are you under any stress? And of course, I said, well, here's my schedule. He said, do you like spicy foods? I said, yes, I do. He said, cut the spicy foods. I can't do anything for the stress. But he said, you can cut the spicy foods out. So I did that. And a couple of months later, you know, it began to get better. So we lived through that. So that was a crisis before I got out of college and graduated. And my dad had taken a job in Minden, Louisiana, with a manufacturing company. And he knew some people at a larger corporation there. And they were looking for some people that they were hiring in the accounting department. So he introduced me to a man that was a human relations director. So I got a job before I graduated in the accounting department at Sperry Rand Corporation in Minden, Louisiana. And they employed 5,000. And my job was going to be to write internal administrative procedures for this corporation. And I have a hard time writing English. So I'd never done any kind of writing, but this was my new assignment. So I took the job because, hey, I need a job. Well, they paid me top wages, $356 a month is what I made in my new college degree job. So
that was pretty good money.
That was good money for getting out. And so we took that job and moved to Minden. We rented a home, a real nice old home, and we're excited about having that. Paid $75 a month for that.
It was furnished.
And it was furnished.
Had
so,
a piano in it.
Yes, had a
grand
nice piano. So,
mm-hmm.
So we moved in there, and we were of course, Mom and Dad, they introduced us to some of their friends, and then we met younger families there, and we went to the first United Methodist Church. What?
I already told that part.
Oh, okay. Anyway, but I'm just going to say that I was, after working with Sperry Rand for a year, they gave me 2 years to write these procedures. I did it in less than a year. And they thought it was just as great thing as sliced bread. And so I thought, well, I snowed these people. And I said to the accounting manager, I said, yeah, okay, what's my next assignment? He said, well, Don, he said, that's your 2 year assignment. He said, you know, you can just sit around and wait till the next one. I said, man, I can't do that. I got to be busy doing something. He said, well, just find you something to do. Well, I got really, you know, antsy. And so I decided I always wanted to be in retail sales or some kind of sales among people. So we knew an insurance company in town that Hall and Crawford. And this guy said, you know, I'd like for you to come to work for me. So I said, I'd like to try that. So I went to work for Hall and Crawford Insurance and stayed with them for a little over a year. But, you know, that was when life insurance was, if you sold a $5,000 a year, a policy on a person, you'd sold a big deal. So it was Travelers Insurance Company. So that was my job to do that. And in the Shreveport region, North Louisiana region, there were 40 agents out of there. And I led that region for a year, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was just talking to people. So, left them because of, you know, an integrity issue that with the manager. So I left them and went to work for Sidewinder, which was a farm equipment manufacturer. And I left them. I was making $450 a month with Travelers, and I took a job making $300 a month working for Sidewinder, so I could learn what it was to make equipment and be able to sell it. So I started at the bottom. I swept the floors of production operation, learned how the machines were made, was required to take the machines once I made them, knew what they did, how they functioned. I had to take and go to a farm over in Gillam, Louisiana, which was out of Shreveport, and where they had farming soybeans and corn and cotton. So I had to put a crop in and bring it out before this company would let me get out on the road to represent them. So I did that, and I had a successful crop that came in. So they knew I knew what I was doing with equipment. So I traveled with them for about 6 months as a sales engineer, go where they would have trouble with some equipment and need to introduce some new equipment. And I did that. And then I had an opportunity to go to work with them as a manufacturer's rep in Illinois, which is a farm equipment a hotbed for the Corn Belt. I mean, you...
Meantime.
Talk about family. And during this time that God blessed us with Suzanne becoming pregnant with her first child, Eric, that's was an amazing thing that God had done in her life, and we didn't really know what all was going to bring to us, but we were so excited. Everybody was excited, my parents, her parents, all our friends. So we were delighted that God was going to give us a child. We didn't know what it was, a little boy, a little girl. That's before they had ultrasound, so we just had to hope what it was. So this was in that Christmas before Eric was born.
In April,
Suzanne decided we need to have the biggest Christmas party in Minden, with the bridge clubs that she was a part of and I was a part of. So we had, it was just a big old blowout of a deal, and it was good. So we got the house all ready, our rent house, and had everybody there and a sit down meal and you name it. It was a big deal. Well, finding out that we were going to be parents, we needed to move out of the rent house and get our own home. And so there was a new subdivision in Minden being built around the golf course. And so we talked to the realtor, and the realtor said yes, and there's a house that we could get into. They were building 1,300 square foot, a little over 1,300 square foot. The cost was $12,500. Brick rancher, little columns on the front, real nice, air conditioned. Three little bedrooms, a little den area, and little living room, and
two baths.
So it was a neat little house, little carport.
Utility
room out there and all that stuff. So it came time to buy it. I didn't have the down payment. And so the realtor's name is Nedra T. Kelly. And she said, Don, I trust you. And she said, I'm going to tell you something I'm going to do. Now, this is illegal for a realtor to do this. But she said, I know you, and said, I'm going to pay that down payment for you, and then you can pay me back when you get the money. All right? Well, that's a good deal to me. So no lawyer got involved, just a handshake. So she paid it, and we paid her back, and got in our first home. And in April of that year, I think it was February, moved in. And in April the 11th, Eric was born. Now that was an ordeal. Suzanne was big as a house, and we were excited and what have you. So my mom's birthday is on April 11th. And so she was hoping that Eric would be born on her birthday. Well, sure enough, day before on the 10th, Suzanne she started having these contractions, and we didn't know what to look for or what to think was going on, but we had to make a run to the hospital in Shreveport. We lived 30 miles away. So on the way there, got stopped by a policeman, and he said, where are you going so fast? I said, well, boy, I was pregnant. She said, got to go to the hospital. He said, well, let me take you there. He said, you want to make sure you get there. So he led us all to the hospital. He's a good friend of mine anyway. So as we got there, Suzanne went into labor. We thought, well, she was there. That's when they quarantined the dads. They didn't get to stay in the room with the wives, you know, at that time. So I was in a quarantined dad's room, you know. And these dads would come in, they'd go out, they'd come in, go out. And 15 babies were born during the time I was in there. In fact, the last one was Buddy AI was his name. And he walked in there and with a son of about 15, and he walked, sat down, had his paper, read a few lines of paper, and the doctor came, said, Mr. AI, he said, you got another beautiful little son. And I asked him, man, what's going on? I said, I've been here for 24 hours. I said, I'll smoke four packs of cigarettes. I said, everybody's coming in here as a baby. I got one coming, I don't know when it's going to be. He said, well, this is only our eighth one. He said, it'll be all right. So he gave me comfort there. So finally, on the 16th child that was born, it was Eric. And so I was supposed to name him John Eric is what we were going to name him. But I got kind of prideful. I had to name him Donald Eric. So I had to put that Donald on him, so I did. But we were so thrilled, and sure enough, born on my mom's birthday, so he's been a favorite child ever since. And but he was a good kid. He just always a obedient kid. First words he said was ball, because that's what we did. We threw balls together, and he threw baseballs, and we threw basketballs, and every now and then, as he grew up, he'd go to the golf course with me. I didn't know how to play golf. I just went out there and hit the ball. And so I guess that's kind of where golf got in his blood, because we lived, I could just walk out the back door and a block away, and I was on the golf course. So that was kind of fun time with him. And he was our only one for,
almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of good son-daddy time, and, of course, Mom
lived in Illinois for a time.
Yes, at 18 months, we moved to Illinois. That's when I was with Sidewinder, and we moved to Illinois. And he would tell people he lived in Jenkin, Illinois. And he'd sing to us, Finkel, Finkel, Little Tor. Mm-hmm. So, but he met a little girl that her dad was in the Air Force up there, and they played together. Her name was Shala. And so he and Shala, they played together. And so he learned how to be nice to little girls that way. And evidently it worked, because he did Foo Dee Dee. it was a neat time for us and hitting him. And after living there in Minden, really, Mom got pregnant with Alex. We moved back from Illinois in her home. And she got pregnant with Alex, and it was a tough pregnancy. It was a hard pregnancy, and she had a thyroid problem at that time. I think it had to be
some kind of a
glandular problem that we thought she was going to lose him, but sure enough, she didn't. And Alex was born, same hospital Eric was born in, Shumpert Hospital there in Shreveport, Louisiana. Born with webbed feet, just like Eric.
No. January 7, 1968.
Yep. And then not too long after that, the next year, along comes Jamie.
It's a surprise.
You know, Eric was playing and Alex was playing and Jamie's surprise. But if she hadn't been a surprise, probably would have been another boy.
Probably.
But when she was born, you know, my mom tells everybody that I ran up and down the hospital hollering, it's a girl, it's a girl, it's a girl, it's a girl. Because it had been 49 years since there'd been a girl born in the Crane family. So she was the first girl to be born in the family. So, and then
she was born June 10, 1969.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, and she was, I always had names for the kids. And I named her Fribdip, gibbets because she was always bouncing around. She's always just, you know, something. We named Alex Agates, and for some reason. And Eric was just Eric. You know. We didn't have a name for him. But then we lived in Minden until 69. Jamie was a week old, and we moved to Marshall.
Because she was a month late coming. We were supposed to move in June. Well, we did. We were building our house in Marshall, Texas. Yeah.
So we moved, and Jamie was a week old, and we moved in our new house in Marshall, Texas. And the first day, I ran out of water.
It was a well, shallow well.
We were on a well, didn't know it. It was a shallow well, so first thing he did was water in the yard, make sure the grass grew. You know, just Mr. Homeowner knowing all this stuff, not. And ran out of water, so I had to wait for that. And then
we had to pack up and move to his mom's and dad's and Stephen's, so we had room to.
Yeah, for several days.
Mm-hmm. Till we got the well back.
Yeah, we got the well back.
So. They were building a community well, you know.
System. It wasn't on
but
yet.
But it wasn't on yet, yeah.
So we had learned a lot of stuff. And mm-hmm. We learned a lot of stuff there that, you know, God taught us some protective lessons that we had built out in the country in a particular section that you had to have this particular size house and nobody else could build in there. It was kind of one of those, you know, areas that you think you belong in, but you really don't. And we built there, and recession hit in early 70, and 69, 70, and nobody was able to build. And so we were isolated. And because of the isolation, then we were targets for theft. And by the grace of God, we were robbed, literally robbed, three times, but Mom was never there with the kids. Mm-hmm. Had to build a cyclone fence around the house, a 5-foot cyclone fence, three strands of barbed wire, looked like a Stalag 13. Had all kind of dogs that, you know, all they did was gnawed on Alex one day and decided, you know, we didn't need dogs. But the last time, you know, they kicked the front door in and took new TV and some coins we had and stuff like that. And fortunately, they were found out. They were doing big garage sales over in Bossier City, Louisiana. Come to find out, there were a whole ring of crooks that had been in Angola prison in Louisiana. And they were hitting these out of the way homes like ours. And the sheriff got the serial number off of our television set. And so that was able to catch those thieves. And they went back to Angola for I don't know how many years. So we moved before they got out, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they didn't bother us anymore. But, you know, always, you know, Texans are full of hot air. And, of course, I, being a native Texan, always wanted to get back to my native state there. So was born in Cass County, Texas. Atlanta, Texas was a little town. About 5,000, December 25th, 1941. Reason I was born there is Mom and Dad were living in Rodessa, Louisiana, and there was no hospital there. The closest one was in Atlanta, Texas. So I was born there, and from there, you know, that's the reason I'm a pedigree Texan. So if they ever secede from the Union, I can always take my whole family back to Texas. And from there, living in Marshall was a real experience. We were totally involved in the church. By that time, I was working with Ford Motor Car Company in a production operation there in Shreveport, and I worked for them for 3 years. And I always wanted to get back into sales and commission sales, which I enjoyed. And so I had an opportunity after 3 years to go back to work in sales with Nelson Equipment Company, which was a Clark distributor in North Louisiana, South Arkansas, and East Texas. So I was
forklifts.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Forklift material handling equipment.
Okay.
So it was something I was familiar with, in production operations. So I had the opportunity to go work for them, and God really blessed that in a special way. So I was with them for about 2.5 years. And during that time, God began to work in our lives in a special way. I was saved as a boy of 11 in a youth camp in North Arkansas. In fact, it was Bentonville, Arkansas. It was just a unique situation. A little youth camp didn't last but 2 years is all it was. It was a little makeshift camp outside of town there. Bentonville was nothing then, but it was a place that God set apart, and Mom and Dad drove us 300 miles to take us to that camp. And it was on a Thursday night at that camp that, in fact, my brother Larry had gone with Mom and Dad on up to Missouri. He wanted to go with them up there, so they'd come by and picked him up, but I didn't want to go. And it was that night there alone that God dealt with me. Old Brother Tabor preached the gospel and literally pointed me and said, you know, if you were the only little boys ever born in the world, that Jesus Christ still had to come and die for you to save you from your sins. And he said, you believe that? And I said, yes, sir, I do. And I trusted Christ that night. So I do have a wonderful testimony of God's grace in early age, but I was just never raised in a church that was completely committed to the Bible. Mom was raised in the Methodist church, and Dad always, you know, he just kind of followed, let her kind of handle that. And so being raised in the Methodist church, there wasn't a whole lot of Bible. But I had told my grandmother, Mim, Esther Snyder, back when I was a little boy of 8 years of age, she asked me, said, Don, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I'm going to be a Baptist preacher. And I had no idea what Baptist preachers were, but I told her I was going to be a Baptist, you know, Baptist preacher. And she reminded me of that after I did become one of those. And so God was gracious to us. And there in Marshall, we were quite involved in the church. And I was a deacon on the First Baptist Church, and Suzanne was involved with the GAs, the nursery. We led the young adult department of the church, and we were just the model church family, because we were there Sunday morning, Sunday night, training union, and Wednesday night. So that was a major outlet for us to be a part of what God wants to become. So as we were involved in the church there, then we had the lay witness mission. And through that lay witness mission, God worked in our life in such a way that he changed our whole home and perspective of what he wanted us to be and do. And so through that time, Mom got saved. I made a recommitment to be what God wanted me to be. It was on the same night. It was April 23rd, 1972, that she got saved. I was at a different home, and I just said, Lord, I'll be what you want me to be. I've tried to run this thing myself, but I'll surrender to what you want. So it was a complete surrender of my life the same night, and it had to be that way, because it couldn't be me surrendering and her not. And so from that point on, things begin to change. We, like any other couple, we had developed some debts that we had that just, it comes with families. And so God began to do something that year in my business that I really didn't realize until after I went through it. But it was a time when people weren't buying the kind of equipment I was selling, but for some reason they were buying from me. In fact, they were calling in and asking if they could talk to me about some particular equipment. And I worked hard to make sure that that people knew who I was, what I did, and I kept going by and calling on people even though they weren't buying. So, but for God's reason alone, he began to have these people to call in and say, you know, Don Crane called on us several months ago. We need to talk to him about something. So I had the best year I ever had. That last year I was in business with Nelson, Clark Equipment Company, and God gave insight in how to do things, and I don't know, it's certainly something I couldn't do, but he got us debt-free, he got us prepared to continue following him. Of course, Mom designed the home that we're in, and of course, a lady's nest is her home, and so to give that up would really have been something. So, but For that next year, we got involved in lay witness missions ourselves. We went to Coushatta, Louisiana, and Susie's already talked about that. We went to Orlando, Oklahoma, and that was a real neat experience of God using us in lives of others. And so we enjoyed that, we rejoiced in that, but we had no indication we were going any place except we're going to be active members of the First Baptist Church of Marshall, Texas, and do what it did. So we always, for some reason, we liked to watch the old time gospel hour on television, and Dr. Falwell, and you know, that vibrant church there, and just, you know, in the early 70s when the school just started, the college just started, and we were watching that, and it was just exciting. So every Sunday night after we'd go to church, there would be several couples of us would gather together in different homes, you know, we'd just swap around. We'll have soup and sandwiches or something, you know, or chips, and you name it. So we'd gather together so we could watch the old time gospel hour together. So we were over at the Biggers home that night, and it was the first night that Dr. Hughes was on the program. He was the new dean of the seminary. And Dr. Fowler came on, and he said, this was in April, a year later,
mm-hmm.
that Dr. Fowler introduced him and said, Dr. Hughes is our new seminary dean. We're starting a graduate school of theology, and it'll be for all you men who are graduated from college. And Dr. Hughes is going to explain what this is going to be. And of course, Dr. Hughes, being a Southern Mississippi man, he said, Dr. Falls asked him to start this seminary, which was a graduate school of theology. They already have the college, and so would like to invite that all of you men that would like to come. He said, this is going to be our textbook, and he held up the Bible, and he said, I want you to come and study. And so it's just like he pointed his finger at me, and I said, Lord, you sell our home, and we'll go. And I didn't think any more about that. I just, you know, blurted it out. Well, because we'd been robbed 3 times, we really were kind of unsettled about staying there. And so we had always thought, well, we'll just move back over to Minden, Louisiana. We've got friends over there. We love that town, and we've always thought maybe we'd retire there. So we didn't think any more thing about it, and we tried to sell the house for 2 years. We got the best realtor in Shreveport, Louisiana, to represent us, because she dealt with that firm dealt with the generals and the colonels, the retired folks from Barksdale Air Force Base, and we deliberately built the house around some golf courses. There were 5 golf courses that were kind of in the middle of. The furthest one was 15 minutes away. So, and the tax structure in East Texas is wonderful. You have none. And so it was a great place for somebody to live, to retire, and you can live a pretty good life over there. And so we thought, well, we'll just see if we can't sell it. Not one person looked at our house. Not one. We just kept getting robbed. So after I said that on Sunday night, on Wednesday of that week, there was a lady from Marshall that called Suzanne, and she introduced herself, said she was a local small realtor there in town and wondered if we would still be interested in selling our house. And Suzanne said, well, yeah. And she said, well, I have a couple I'd like to bring out on Sunday afternoon at 2:00 to show your house, if that'd be all right. So made that arrangement, everything's fine. So I came home from work that Wednesday and picked Suzanne and the kids up. We were going to church, and she said, you're not going to believe this. So this little rinky-dink realtor from Marshall called and said she wanted to show her house Sunday. We laughed together. And, you know, nobody in Marshall didn't even thought about it. So we went on church and enjoyed church and forgot about it, really. And we went to church Sunday morning. Breakfast dishes there, and came in, lunch dishes there, and Suzanne said, well, I'm going back to take a nap. She said, forgot about people coming. And I was working with a college career group that time, and we were doing a musical that night, Come Together by Jimmy and Carol Owens, and so we had our dress rehearsal that afternoon. We were putting it on that night. And so as sure enough, Alex had a kite. Alex was always getting, you know, his bicycles in the ditch or something, and he had his kite, and he caught his kite up in a tree. And so literally I was up the tree getting the kite out. 2 o'clock sharp, 2 cars drove in our driveway. Suzanne's in the bedroom asleep. dishes, nothing cleaned up at the house. They're in ready to show this out. Well, I'm trying to get out of the tree. Alex runs up, lets him in to the utility room of the house. I mean, you don't sell a house.
Garage, yeah.
To the garage, you know, and to the utility mud room and all that stuff. And the worst place you could ever show off. And so I finally get out and come to my house, come to the back door. And the guy met me. He said, I'm going to buy this house. I said, man, I hadn't even quoted you a price yet. And so I quoted him a price. And he said, well, you're $5,000 too high. I said, well, you know, it's kind of Hebrew coming out. And I said, you got to be something. So we got a good place to start. So and I told him, I said, well, let me go wake my wife up. So I went back and woke her up, and she was not in a good mood. You know, here, I'm not ready to show my house, you know. I'm in, well, it was on. So she showed the house, and I told this guy, I said, look, hey, I've got to go do a dress rehearsal working with the church in town, and we've got a dress rehearsal with a college career. He'll put in a program tonight. He said, so ask me anything about the house. He said, well, tell me what's wrong with it. We built the house, and we used old Chicago brick, really lily Chicago brick that came in, was railed in from Chicago. It's bigger, it's old, and it's heavy. And so we built a den that our den was seat 40. I mean, it was a big sunken den, 12-foot cathedral ceiling with a fireplace that was big enough to set 14 hines on. I mean, it was a big one. We burned 52-inch logs, so it was a big one. And it was a place that we knew that we'd like to entertain, you know, people and come in and all that stuff. So it was so heavy that when they put the foundation in, they didn't do it just right. And there was a crack in the brick in that big room about the size of your finger all the way from top to the bottom. So I told the guy, I said, you got to get some soil stabilizer in here and get that pushed back up so it'll come together. And he said, oh, it's no problem. So what else? I said, well, you see this 5-foot cyclone fence with 3 strands of barbed wire? He said, yeah. I said, well, we've literally been robbed 3 times. And so that's a deterrent. He said, well, there's no problem with that. He said, anything else? I said, well, air conditioners, I just had to have it repaired, worked on, and changed, really, because it had a pinhole. It's a gas unit, so got that fixed. He said, that's great. And I said, oh, by the way, I said, the perk test on the property was not done right, and you got to dig some new field lines and a drainage pit for your sewer. And I said, which is going to be about $1,500, $2,000 at that time. He said, that's no problem. So, I mean, everything I said, you know, was negative, was no problem, no problem, no problem. So I bid adieu and I left, and I didn't think anything could come of it, just to be honest. So I got back, Suzanne met me at the back door, and she said, I don't know what this means, but said the realtor just called and said they'd put up escrow money on the house, and that she didn't want 6% for selling this house, but only wanted 3%. And the guy's gone up on his offering $1,500. So, I mean, so I said, well, what'd you say? Well, it's sold. I said, that's right. She said, well, I called Roberta Kitchens over in Minden and told Roberta, and they're thrilled that we're going to be moving back to Minden. And said, you know, they're building their new house, and they've got to be out the end of May, and we got to be out of this house at the end of May, because this is April, and these people need to move in there by the end of May. And so said, I talked to Roberta, and Roberta said, we've got to move out. Y'all can move in our old house while you're building your house out here by us, in Garrison Trail, and everything just lovely. And about that time, when she got through, it's like God turned on the light. I said, no, it's not what I said. God just sell our home, and we'll go to seminary. And she said, you're right. We just bowed our head and said, thank you, Lord. We're leaving you on seminary. We don't know what we're doing, but you do, so that's what we're going to do. So we announced that at church that night, what we're going to do, and I mean, there were people who were excited. There were people that were unexcited. There were people wondering where I'm going off up here, this Lynchburg, this independent Baptist school, and you know, it's not Southern Baptist, and here we are, a Southern Baptist church, and you got a full scholarship to go to Fort Worth. We got a job for you. We got housing for you and your family, and it's all paid for. What are you doing going up there to Virginia? Do you even know anything else? I mean, it was a total negative. So at that point, you know, one of the guys said, you know, if you go up there to that school, you'll never preach in Southern Baptist Church. You know that, don't you? He said, why are you going? I said, well, I'm going to tell you why I'm going. God wants me to go there. That's why. So he said, can't convince you otherwise. I said, no. So that was it. The end of May, we packed up, and moved to Bedford. But when I told the Nelson Equipment Company, the owner, Jack Nelson, Jack was a non-believer, Episcopalian. He and his Episcopalian rector would sit on Friday afternoon and drink a fifth of Jim Beam together and see which one could drink the most, and they were the winner. And so that was his spirituality of the week. And I went in and talked to him. I said, Jack, I'm leaving. I'm going to be leaving the company. And he reached into the top drawer of his desk and pulled out a 38 pistol. And he put it on his desk. He said, what company are you going to go to work for? I said, I'm not going to work for a company. I said, I'm going to seminary. I said, I'm going to school up in Lynchburg, and I'm going to study for the ministry. He said, I want to tell you something. He said, if I thought you'd gone to work for a competitor, he said, I was going to kill you right here because you'd kill my business. He said, that's how important you've been to my business. You don't realize it, but you've paid my business off in the time you've been here. The monies I owed to start this business, you've been the one that's paid it off for me because I worked on a third of the gross profit. And so he said, I can't fight against God. So he put his pistol back in his desk. So those were kind of neat things to come along at that time. And by the way, Jack did get saved. He came down with cancer, and his son, Chris, went to college. And the first people he met in college were Campus Crusaders, and they led him to Christ. And he'd contact me. He said, pray for my dad. He told me his dad had cancer. Pray for my dad, Mr. Crane. He said, he always respected you. And he said, pray for him. He's dying. And I said, you know, so I did, and was going to go by and see him when I came home, but it was too late. But Chris told me, he said, my dad got saved right before he died. And he said, it was really because of your testimony before him that really that he was open to the gospel. So that was kind of a neat experience.
Going up to see what we were going to.
When we announced to the church that night, after the musical with a college career, that we were going to seminary, and they told me I'd never preach in Southern Baptist Church, that same night the pastor came to me and he said, you're preaching next Sunday. And so I did preach in Southern Baptist Church. But it was a special time for us, and a special time for that church as well, and that pastor that was a part of our lives in a special time. Connie Ward was his name, and some wonderful people in that church. Earl and Marianne Harkins, Carol and Gracie Fletcher were two couples that really encouraged us through those days, and we thank God for them today. So.